Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
I just was in here with you for 40 minutes, so no. Like, the trick to this is we just need to come in and start talking in here.
We can't even look at each other when you come in. We just go.
Yeah, because honestly, if we're anywhere else, I just talk to you and tell you everything.
It's like, we have to just like, well, you know, Jennifer Lopez, don't make eye contact with Miss Lopez. That's what we have to do.
Is that a thing?
Don't make eye contact. She's a cunt. That's why. There's no other reason. A grade A cunt.
I always said it. I've said it since you did the Venus Gillette ads, and you're a witness to that.
Yes.
Those Venus Gillette ads, they used to be on in the cinema, and I would say out loud, I'd shoot that one in the face.
She is a cunt.
I would.
But do you know what's remarkable? Is she has made a career out of being mediocre at best at nothing.
I don't even know.
Like her music, I'm like,
who is listening to this?
Remember when she canceled her tour?
Because nobody went because it was
and
shit.
And she was like, oh, it's a personal thing. I was like, due to overwhelming uninterest.
Yeah.
Your tour got cancelled.
Like,
that's why I'd never do an MMI tour, because we'd have to cancel all the dates. Due to overwhelming uninterest.
I don't know.
Due to overwhelming
also, like,
disinterest.
A tour, would you calm down? We could do a tour
like a little mini tour.
I'd totally do a mini tour, but it would be something like, hey, in November we're going to be here, and then in July we're going to be here.
July 2027 we might be there.
Yeah.
See how
if he's buy tickets.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I often see, you know, when people do, like Auntie Donna, I went to see Auntie Donna the other night, and it was really, really good. They're doing a tour at the moment, like, and they did 2 nights in Dublin. They're doing like 10 dates in the UK. And like, they're popular, but they're not like popular to the point that everybody knows who they are, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, they're not big, big. But like, it seems to be working for them.
Like, they're making a living.
They're making a living out of it, like, and they're...
They're making a living!
You know me, I'm not big into like comedy shows because I'm always worried that people aren't going to laugh at people, and then I get really uncomfortable.
Someone at work said, I don't know what I was saying, but I was messing at the microwave. This guy was like, you should do stand up. I said, I kind of do.
If I was there, I would have said, stop feeding this delusion.
I said, hey,
stop feeding this
I kind of do. And he was like, tell me what. I said, no.
Didn't.
Shh, shh. I said, I played in the laughter lounge. Is that where we played?
Sometimes. Is that where we were?
I'm like, is it the comedy club?
I always say the comedy club in my head as well. I'm like, it's not called the comedy club. It's,
it's the iteration that gets me. Because it's the like
comedy club. It's an LL or it's a CC.
Hey, CC me on that email.
It's one of the two. Today's Sarah's birthday. No, tomorrow. Tomorrow's Sarah's birthday.
Today is my birthday, Eve. I'm going to tell you a little story. Welcome to this week's episode of the podcast. So,
Sarah's been acting up. Fully acting up about her birthday. She has been pulling a Colin for the last 2 weeks.
So I made a decision. Last weekend, someone texted me. I actually am going to read out a text because I thought when I read it back, I said, Jesus Christ. Right. So someone said, how are you feeling about your birthday? I said, I'm feeling a mixture of, wow, you're halfway through your life and this is what you have achieved, with a depressing undertone. And then I jumped to, wow, you're halfway through your life and look at where you're at in comparison to how it begun, in a more positive tone. It just swings between those two sentiments. And then when I wrote that and sent it, I was like, I'm going to do something about my birthday and make myself feel better about it.
I think so. I hate my birthday and I'll never do anything to make myself feel better. So I think it's a good thing that you're being actively like, I want it to be a nice day and I want to enjoy it and I want to just have a day.
Yeah.
A day.
No, it's my 40th birthday.
No, she has been.
More than a day. So it's
acting
my. And now Wayne will tell you about the acting up, right?
Acting up.
So. I said to her, Jay, she said to me today, do you want to record on Thursday? I said, no, it's my birthday Eve,
it's
and I think
birthday.
I've got a plan.
Hold on a second. Birthday Eve?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
What is that, Sarah?
I said, it's the day before my birthday.
Do you think you're Christ our Lord on Christmas Day?
I
and
do.
It's like,
yeah.
The little people are coming to see you in the crib on Christmas Eve. Is that what you think is happening?
On my 40th birthday.
That message you sent me, I said, her birthday, what?
Hmm.
I was like, did you cut off a letter of that last word birthday ever? What
this
is happening?
Snide little cunt.
Yeah, I did.
She didn't say anything. She just kept it in her back pocket.
I did.
And I was like, Sarah is acting up. I said, I am acting up. And I'm allowed to act up.
I actually said Sarah's turned into Colin about her birthday.
And I am. I've decided to think of Colin's method around his birthday. And be like, yeah, That's what I'm going to do. I'm really excited about... Oh. My favourite thing about the live show, sorry for all the people that came to the live show, wasn't the live show. My favourite thing about the live show was the green room.
Really?
Yeah, because...
Which one, though? Which
the
show?
The one we just did recently.
Oh, okay, because before you got really anxious in the green room, yeah.
Because I just was with my friends.
Yeah.
And we were all just hanging out, and I was like, oh, I want to do this for my birthday.
Yeah.
And I never do anything like that. I never make people get together for my birthday.
Yeah.
But I'm having a little thing in the, what's it called?
The circular
on the South Circular Road.
In Rialto, yeah.
Yeah. But wait till I tell you, my mom texts me. She said, hey, what are you doing for your birthday? I said, I don't know, you tell me. I said, you tell me, woman. She wrote back, she said, oh, but you're just better at those things. I said, I'm better at those things because I've a shit mum like you.
Yeah, no.
Well, then she didn't text me for 3 more days after.
You have to do, like, it's not nice to be told you're better at something when other people, you have to do it because other people are letting you down. Like, that's not a reason to be, that shit is, like, one of the most manipulative things you can do, because that's weaponizing confidence at its finest. Well, I didn't do it because you're better at it.
Yeah.
Well, then learn to be good at it. You stupid fucking bitch. Not your mom, but in
general. I say that to Graham whenever he asks me for an orgasm.
Fuck off, like. Don't yourself.
I say, but you're so much better at it. Oh, no, just take out your little hand.
I just think it's shitty. Like, saying that to somebody, like, about something that they are meant to do for you is really not cool. My family's the worst.
So, and then Graham was like, Graham was decorating the room tomorrow. Him and Lily are going off to do it. And I was like, you could just wait and we'll go down together and do it. And Lily was like, no, it's your birthday. You can't decorate your own room. Yeah. And I was like, I decorated my 21st and I bought my own cake.
You did, bud.
Like, so, welcome to this week's episode of
Family Poor Sarah. Shit. Poor Sarah.
Hey!
Poor Sarah Jane on her birthday eve. Can you believe it?
I know!
We need to start, we could make a lot of money.
What?
We start making cards like Happy Birthday Eve.
Happy Birthday Eve. Emma got me the best birthday card ever. And no one's going to get it.
And no one will get
the
it.
The minute she handed it to
she
me.
She knew it straight away.
I was like, are these the bricks from the Blues Brothers? So there's a scene in the Blues Brothers where Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Lets off a bazooka into the apartment complex that, what are their names?
Elroy
and.
I can't remember his name. Elroy and I can't remember. Anyway, the other guy,
John Cusack. What is there? John Cusack? No, Sarah.
No, Sarah. I everybody's shouting at us. I know when we do this, I can hear people screaming at us.
Steve
is like, oh, don't follow. Blues Brothers are Elwood and Jake.
Elwood and Jake. Anyway, Elwood and Jake get blown out of their apartment complex and they're under like a pile of bricks. And the noise those bricks make. Anyway, she got me a picture of the bricks from the Blues Brothers scene. And I knew immediately. And she got the picture that Quint draws on the chalkboard in Jaws. Because that's my favourite movie. And because she's my best friend and she knows me so well.
I got it on a cake for her, on top of the cake.
Yay!
On her birthday eve.
On my birthday eve. Yes, it was my eve of my birthday eve.
Birthday eve.
Yeah.
And we're going to London next weekend.
And we're going to London.
Also, by the way, the cake I got, Sarah Jane, is from our friend Eve. It's called, what's her name?
Sweet Dub, isn't it?
Sweet Dub on Instagram. And she makes the most beautiful vegan cakes.
Here, I don't have anything. I've no nails.
I've no news either.
Other than I got the flu and you got the flu and we all got the flu.
Everybody is sick, dude. Everybody is sick. The whole fucking country is sick.
And obviously, fuck Israel.
Fuck Israel. Fuck Israel. Oh my God. Fuck Israel. Fuck Israel. I gotta move. What do we do?
And there's a murder spree currently happening in Ireland.
What is going on?
What is going on?
Every morning, because I get like Irish Independent emails me in the morning with the headlines or whatever, and I'm like, who's
That's
killing?
Why you're so sad.
What's killing? Who's killing?
Yeah.
How many people are dead?
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
Like.
But I'm like, is it a lot? It is a lot.
Yeah.
It is a lot. I thought maybe it was just that thing that the confirmation.
The baby,
was,
the like, two kids?
The two kids, man.
There's a little baby that was found in the. Yeah. Where is that? Donabate,
yeah.
Then the other kid, they still don't know where it's remained. They don't know
they
that.
They don't know this, yeah.
Well, he is dead.
He's dead, yeah.
And then there is...
That guy who killed his mother and brother?
Yeah.
Was it mother, father and brother?
I think so.
what the fuck is going on? And apparently
and then
that
the
guy,
other guy did the murder-suicide.
Yeah, him and his kid.
Yeah.
What's going on?
What were you about to say apparently what?
That guy who killed his family, apparently he'd been like in and out of institutions since he was 22.
Oh.
America's
shutting down, right?
Yeah, the government's shutting down. I don't know, that country. Lads, you're cooked.
You're cooked.
I'm sorry. Like, I feel for every single person that lives in that country that has an ounce of cop on their body because that country is cooked.
Cooked.
Like, that fucking... What's his name? Pete Hegseth?
Oh, did you watch the video of him hit himself in the dick with the skateboard?
Alex sent it to me. I could not stop laughing.
Like...
I was like, what's Alex sending me? I was fucking howling laughing at it.
He's on TV!
He's a dumb cunt. Trump is a dumb cunt. They're all dumb cunts. But the problem is, they're dumb, dangerous cunts.
Yeah.
It'd be fine if they were just dumb cunts that you could go, I'm a fucking idiot. But they have power and they're dangerous. So America, I'm sorry. I know everything is shit at the moment over there. Like, I don't... How would you live there? Like, I feel like I would be on the street screaming really loudly all the time.
I have seen people on the street screaming and just...
Did you see the video of that girl on the bus? I think she was in New York. I was like, yes, she's right.
Everything
she's saying is right. I was like, that's me.
I sent it to Graham. I said, here's that.
That's me. Every single thing she said was like, she's correct and right.
Yeah.
You're going to work in the morning and there's our tax money is paying to blow the heads off children and we're just meant to go to work.
Yeah.
And be like, cool. Sure. It was like the most coherent, crazy thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was. It was a really
like,
coherent,
it was like, you
crazy
knew she
rant.
Just had enough. She was like, I need to get this out of my system.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Good for her. I finished Band of Brothers, you'd be happy to know.
Why were we watching Band of Brothers?
I don't know. I'm going through something.
Something
right?
on. It was something to be on.
I'm going
Italian.
Through a thing. I'm watching the Gilmore Girls. Terrible show.
I can't watch that show.
Terrible.
Watch that show. They start doing the tongue like this and I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up.
Nobody in
Look
the
at
history
quaint
of the world.
Town with a
the monologues in that show.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Like, here's the thing. 30 Rock can do that because 30 Rock is funny. But that shit, I was like, oh, your mother
But even the monologues in 30 Rock are references you would get.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying... The person that wrote the Gilmore Girls...
Filthy Zionist, by the way.
...is trying so hard. You know that, like, is it that meme where it's like, I tried to be so, like... different than I brought a book and stood in the corner.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah,
he
yeah.
knows me. That's literally that show. That entire show is like,
it's like I brought a book to the concert.
Yeah,
I should have people are like, people put up those posts being like, oh, when I was 12 years old, I went to see One Direction and I shaved my entire body from top to bottom. I thought they'd invite me backstage. That shit kills.
There's one I went Nine Inch Nails were on tour. There was like someone like had a video and they were like obviously at the show. And they were like, Trent doesn't know, but I shaved just... I shaved tonight just in case him and his wife invite me back.
Like, but there's people that genuinely, their brains... shaved my cooch just in case. I'm very sorry.
Oh my
like,
god.
Yeah, I've never gone to a concert and been like, oh, maybe.
Never in the history.
I'm like, let's leave.
Yeah, I've never in the history. We've had opportunity where you know the band.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
And they'd be like, hey, come back. And then she'd be like, so do you want to go to the car? I said, this stupid bitch.
I'm like, I haven't shaved.
I said, I don't even like this band.
I didn't shave.
I didn't shave.
It's really bad down there. He's going to say no. But yeah.
He went a weed whacker.
And it's doing the thing where it's like, bing, bing. It's getting caught.
Like that scene in Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. Just me going to the toilet and wheelings.
Oh my god. No, those fucking posts make me laugh so hard. It's 2012, shaving my body from top to bottom. And
nice.
But yeah, that you make a sense of that Gilmore Girls thing where it's like, I'm so different.
Yeah.
I'm not like the other girls.
And that's the other thing. They're not like the other girls. They eat enormous amounts
like
of junk. They're stick thin.
Yeah.
Like, I will say that Lorelai Gilmore.
Which one's she?
She's the mother, well, both Lorelai, but the mum.
Oh, yeah?
That woman has the best arse I've ever seen.
Really?
She wears jeans in that show, and I'm like...
Her ass looks amazing.
You look... Girl.
Girl!
Phenomenal.
Girl. What's she up to now?
I don't know, but I know she was married to that guy from that show... nobody cares, so I'm not getting into it. But she was, I showed him to Graham, and Graham was like, oh, that guy's in everything. So when I was like, character actors.
Are they divorced now?
I think so.
Hey guys, Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman.
Keith Urban and Nicole. Emma was like legitimate.
I thought they were forever.
I told her yesterday. And Ride she was or Die. Like, what?
Ride or Die. The only thing I know about, I watched a show one time and the people on the show were talking about Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman. The only thing I know about Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman is that she staged an intervention when they were 4 months married because he was a severe alcoholic. And then he was like, she saved my life. And now he's like, bye. Although I wonder who instigated the divorce.
Well, someone from the Times. Yeah. And journalists from the Times. Put up a video, like a video of like when he interviewed Keith Urban. He was like, I interviewed him a number of years ago, but there was a point in the interview where I asked him about his wife. And he was like, he wasn't rude, he wasn't aggressive, but I could just tell he was like,
didn't want to talk about her.
And it was like every interview he ever does, there's a point where they talk about Nicole his Kidman. Wife, who is much more famous
yeah,
than him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and also like, not only is she his wife, who's much more famous than him, she's his wife who was married to a Scientologist who's one of the most famous
she's
people
Nicole
in the world.
Nicole Kidman.
She's also in every movie Nicole Kidman does, all those indie movies she does, she's riding all
everything,
sorts.
Everything, yeah. She loves to wear a bad wig and ride people.
She loves that movie. It's like her fucking favorite thing baby to do. Girl. The worst wigs.
She loves a bad wig and a hard penis. Yeah. Yeah, her two favourite things. Yeah. But yeah, no, I don't know anything about him. And also, like, I just feel... Here's my thing. And this may be a terrible thing to say. And if it is, I apologise. If you are a person who is semi-famous, not very famous, some people know you, and you marry someone that is an A-list, excessively famous person, and then you become a couple, and then you get mad that the media are talking to you about your A-list celebrity partner, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Because that's how the media works. They're trying to sell copy.
Yeah.
You're not going to sell copy by itself because you're not that famous. You're going to sell copy because your wife or your partner is
like
famous.
White Irish men in the comments of that Times piece, by the way, that were like, Keith Urban's super famous. And I was like, what?
No, he's not.
He's country music.
He's absolutely not.
I didn't know who he was until
I could not name
starts.
You a single song that that man sang.
I tell you what, he's fucking punching.
He is punching.
Like.
He is punching. He looks, yeah, he is punching.
He's but a short king,
He is a short king. But she's quite tall, though, isn't she?
I think he's a short king.
She likes that. That's her thing.
She likes a short king?
Yeah, well, she married Tom Cruise for years.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like 5'3" or something.
He'd probably sue us for saying that. Allegedly.
I don't give a fuck.
Allegedly, that Scientologist who hangs out with the guy who killed his wife. His
allegedly.
One.
Allegedly killed Tom. Where is Sher? What's her name?
Sherry.
Shelley Miscavige. Where is Shelley Miscavige? But yeah, like that shit always pissed me off when they're like, when the other person is like, well, I'm like, I do my own thing. Honey, I know you do your own thing, but nobody cares.
Yeah.
And then you said, I'm going to get married to a super, super famous person and then act brand new, like it's your first day on earth and be like, I don't know why everybody's asking me about them. Because nobody gives a fuck about you. Anyway.
Is that how you feel when people talk to you about me?
Yeah. Stop talking about her. Shut up. I don't.
It is, the minute someone sees me, they'll be like, how's Emma?
Well, like, people have asked.
I said, you want to ask me how I am?
I've been out and about and people have stopped me by the podcast and been like, where's Sarah Jane? I'm like, I don't know. But I do know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I do know where you are. I'm like, no, I don't know where she's
Yeah, but if sometimes someone asks me that, I don't know where you are. I share everything with you and you share nothing with me. That's who are you texting?
Sarah the other day got real mad at me because I was reading an article on my phone and she went, who are you texting? I said, I physically showed her the article out of fear. I said, I'm just reading this article about this film.
It was the most obscure thing as well.
Like, I was just trying to remember the name of the movie that Lars von Trier made about the Columbine shooting and I couldn't remember what it was called.
It was, I said, sorry.
It's called
I said, who are you texting? And she said, showed me. And I said, what are you looking at? I said, I told you.
No reading in this relationship.
I told you. When you're
Stop
with
learning.
Me, when you're with me, this is all about me. Chips don't bounce, honestly. You bitch.
That's honestly what it felt like for a brief second when you said it to me. I was like, oh, I read this.
Even earlier on, you were on your phone. And I was going to be like, who are you talking to? Who are you talking to?
Who was I talking to?
I don't know. Who are you talking to? Who said comments to? right? My birthday eve.
Birthday.
All eyes on me.
This episode's called Birthday Eve, by the way. 100% this episode's called
All Eyes on Me.
All Eyes on Me. Have you got any housekeeping?
Housekeeping? Yeah.
We have no housekeeping.
Jesus
Christ. We're not doing anything. We're not
I
going
I did put
anywhere.
Up a video today of telling people about the birthday Eve situation.
Oh, did you?
And said Emma said that's the thing. And I'm going to read out how many people responded saying...
Say? They're wrong. They're all wrong,
yeah,
whatever they
on,
said.
I'll tell you now. Laura Keyes Moran. Happy said. Birthday Eve.
No, it's not a thing.
Heart.
Not a thing.
Not
a thing. Not a thing.
Sarah Arrow. She said, don't mind Emma.
Oh, how is Arrow?
She said, don't mind Emma. It is a thing.
No, it's not.
She says she gets a little bit excited when we call out her name on the podcast.
Oh, Sarah Arrow.
Mairead Waters says, enjoy the last day of your 39. Treat yourself. Emma's wrong. She didn't say that, but yeah. Happy birthday, Eve. Chelsea says, Chelsea is one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen.
Let me see Chelsea. Oh, she's gorgeous. Oh, she looks like a little sugar plum.
Doesn't she?
She's beautiful.
Some fella is pulling the mickey off himself.
Also, Chelsea, you're very pretty, but you're very wrong.
Chelsea, hey. Merry birthday, Eve.
It's not a thing.
There you go. Let's see, last one. Eva McGlone just sent me heart eyes because she knows I'm right.
Eva McGlone, shut the fuck up.
Here.
Today's my birthday, Eve.
No,
it's not. Emma keeps telling me that that's not a thing, but tomorrow's my 40th birthday, and I'm making it a thing, because usually I'm miserable on my birthday. Usually, I hate my birthday.
But I'm glad you're liking your birthday, but birthday Eve's not a thing.
It is a thing.
It's not a thing.
It is a thing.
I love how I say that, and then I'm fully celebrating your birthday Eve. Yeah.
Birthday Eve, it's my birthday. All eyes on me. This is the song for the birthday
All
Eve. All eyes on me. Right, do you want to tell me?
Yeah, we have
story?
No housekeeping, so.
Yeah, sorry. There's the housekeeping. It's my birthday Eve.
It's Sarah's birthday Eve.
Look anybody
little,
needs
look
to know.
Look at these clips I got down in the other crap shack beside the post office.
Is that one still open?
Yeah, it's the big one. You know the big one beside the post office? I don't know what it's called.
Oh, the pound shop?
Is that what it is?
Well, Eurosavers.
Every time I go in there, somebody's having an argument with somebody.
These were in Eurosavers?
Yeah, I thought they were cute.
They are cute.
I didn't want to do my makeup. I go, what?
Oh my God, they're so cute.
Right? I was like, I might as well get them. And then they were like, you spent €20, do you want free toilet paper? I said, yeah,
I know, what's
on.
That about?
I said, go on. I said,
they do that
Mary
all the time.
Looked at her badge and I said, Mary!
Give me that toilet paper.
Give me that toilet paper.
Wrap it up.
I have never done that. Have you ever done that thing if someone's wearing a name badge? You go, oh, sorry, Justin.
Did I ever tell you about a time I was wearing this necklace and a woman behind the counter said to me, what's your name? I said, sorry. She said, what's your name? I said, this says Notion.
Notion.
Yeah.
Notion's half from 11.
Patience. Patience, Grace.
We went to school, a college with a guy called Patience. I think he was called Patience.
I remember that time I was on a call when we worked in electricity. And the girl was very angry.
Yeah.
And I said,
have patience, Patience.
Patience, please be patient.
I'm sure that really helped the situation that was going on.
I understand.
Hey, patience. Listen.
I said, I understand you're very upset about the meter reading, but.
Remember we did that.
Patience, could you
just be patient?
Please be patient. I remember saying that and being like, this is only going to blow up. But I wasn't, you took that shit to heart. And
Sarah,
I was so dead behind the eyes.
When I tell you, I was only thinking of that job today because I was doing something for them. I hated that job with every fibre of my being.
The phone ones?
And then when I got to move to accounts, I was like, oh, this is nice.
I remember one time Emma came down to me and she was like, there's a woman on the phone and her power's not being cut off. And I was like, all right, okay. And she's like, and she said that 2 weeks ago. And do you remember this? It was like someone or something was set on fire belonging to her.
Oh, yeah.
I said, she's lying. And you were like, no, she's so upset.
I used to believe so many people.
I said, I tell you what, she's lying through her hoop. Tell her if she wants to be reconnected, she needs to
pay the bill.
Her fucking bill.
I used to believe so many people.
Oh, people would get on
I'd be
the
like,
phone.
Oh, God.
And like, we didn't even deal with like, that
no,
was to go to
escalations.
But
yeah,
you'd get the fucking full 25 minutes of like, please. Oh, and then there was the ones where they'd ring, like the ESB would ring and be like, hey, we went to disconnect this house, but we can't disconnect it. And we'd be like, why? And be like, well, he came out of Pitchfork.
Yep. That's fair enough.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Don't
yeah.
disconnect
Don't
that
disconnect
house.
It then. And then you get the phone call from him being like, send any man here. If you send another man to my property, I tell you what, they'll be getting a pitchfork like, up the hall.
We say, Jim, please. Jim,
please have patience.
Jim, please.
Jim.
Just please. Jim.
I'm calling the guards out. Do you remember there was one that
yeah.
rang? That was the one. There was another one that rang you and we had to call the guards for their safety.
My sister and her partner, her husband, work for this specific company and they've had to call the guards numerous times because people threatened to like kill themselves.
Just to end it over an electricity?
Kick the chair, yeah. So they're like, well, we have to do this. And then they calm down and they're like, oh, no, it's fine.
It's the wrong one. I don't know. There was one time I got disconnected accidentally.
Remember that, yeah?
No, I remember. I never fucking some stupid cunt came out and disconnected me on a Friday when I was in work.
Oh, and that's the weekend then.
Yeah, so came home and obviously my house alarm kept going off.
Shit.
Thankfully, we didn't have Lily. And then because they made the mistake, they gave me, I think it was like 800 quid.
Yeah, they have to give you something.
I was like, sorry. She was like, we can't get anybody out. I said, excuse me.
Yeah, then when they could.
I said, well, you may give me money to get a camper van for the week. Like, what am I doing? And me and Graham had to stay in the house.
Your fridge, everything. Like.
And we would stay in the house for the whole weekend until.
Losing the will.
And then they gave us more money because they forgot to put us on the emergency reconnection list on Monday. I said, give me fucking patience.
Patience.
Join the Murder Most Irish Patreon and unlock over 200 uploads from the world of Emma, Sarah Jane, and Colin. Featuring MMI Drive, Ask Me Arse, Girls on Film, and much, much more. The MMI Patreon is a treasure trove of goodies for all our amazing listeners. But that's not all. Get ready for the long-awaited Season 2 of Music Most Awesome and the return of Miscellaneous Most Irish. Our look at cults, alien abductions, and all things macabre. For just €6 a month, you can join our community of dedicated fans, show your support for Murder Most Irish, and gain access to all these incredible extras. So join in the fun at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish for only €6 a month.
Give my mammy €6.
Okay, so this week I am going to do a case that I actually did at the last live show because I'm a lazy bitch. So yeah, so I'm going to cover the Mays prison escape. My references are from the Irish Times, Irish Independent, Kane.Ulster. There's a documentary that I watched called History's Greatest Escapes with Morgan Freeman. Prison Memory Archive, the irishcentral.com, and numerous other references that I will pop into the show notes when we are popping it up online. Also, there's a 1983 documentary called The Male Jay's Escape, Jail Escape Complete Documentary, and it's narrated by Brian Cox, and it's so good. He's Brian like, Cox. And then they got out to the jail. Yeah, I can't do Brian Cox's voice.
Can you not?
No, I can't do Brian Cox's voice.
I can do a...
People are not serious. That voice.
I love it!
Yeah, that voice.
I fucking love it!
But he's got the best voice to narrate something.
He does have
something.
A great voice.
So I will put the link up for that as well if you want to watch it. It's very, very good. So... On the 9th and 10th of August 1971, the RUC and the British Army carried out something called Operation Demetrius. So during dawn raids over a 48-hour period, 342 people were arrested for having alleged links to the Provisional Irish Republican Army. With no evidence and only out-of-date intelligence, this act was organised and drawn out by the Unionist Government of Ireland and was approved by the British government. So they were in cahoots. Their ultimate goal was to weaken the IRA by arresting and detaining suspected members and supporters of the IRA. And to do this, they would start using internment camps to reach their goal. And one of the reasons I did this at the live show was because of everything that's currently happening in Israel and how Palestinians are being interned in these camps with no evidence, no proper anything. There's children in these fucking camps and they're being kidnapped and thrown into these camps and it's absolutely horrific. So just to let you know, anybody that thinks that what's happening in Palestine isn't linked to what happened in Ireland, it fucking is. They all learn from each other. The first sweep of people arrested consisted of 342 Irish Republicans, most of whom were Catholic, and zero loyalists. It became evident quickly that these mass arrests were not to rid the north of Ireland of violence, but to target one specific group of people. Ulster loyalists were actively carrying out acts of violence towards Irish nationals and Catholics, but by 1975, only a total of 107 loyalists were in the internment camps against a figure of 1,874 Irish people.
I'm out. Say that again.
So by 1975, in the camps, there was 1,874 Irish nationalists or Republican people, you know, identified that way, and 107 loyalists.
Oh.
And then out of the 107 loyalists, most of them were kept in, like, the nicer part of the prison and treated better. The operation triggered...
Would you just convert?
I'd be like, I don't believe in the Jeebus. What do they do?
They don't believe Mary's cat...
A virgin.
A virgin.
There was a guy supporting Auntie Donna the other night. He made a very funny joke. He was like, can all the Catholics clap their hands? And can all the Protestants do some spells or whatever you do? And I was like, that is how we look at them. I'm not Catholic, but you know, I kind of am.
You're
but
Catholic.
I'm not. But I don't identify as Catholic. I don't, if that says it on the thing, I put agnostic. I'm not Catholic. I said to the Pope, fuck off.
You know, Leslie.
Yeah.
Her mom was married and her husband died, so she was a widow. And then she met a new man, and she was like, I'm going to remarry.
Fell in love.
Yeah, fell in love. And they wanted to marry, and then they had to write, they had to get, like, they had to write to the Pope.
Yeah, to be able to marry the church, right? It's crazy.
And I don't believe they got it, because they didn't get married in church.
No way.
And she's, like, a really, she's a believer, like.
She's, like, devout.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say she's devout, but, like, it means a lot to her. Yeah. She believes, like.
It's crazy because now they're crying out for people to get married in church because nobody wants to do it anymore because the Catholic Church is a fucking mafia operation full of paedophiles. I said what I said. So,
sorry.
The operation triggered an immediate and intense surge in violence, marking the worst unrest since the riots of August 1969. The British Army faced sustained assaults from the IRA and Irish nationalist rioters. I cannot speak today, particularly in Belfast. Journalist Kevin Myers described the chaos. He said, insanity seized the city. Hundreds of vehicles were hijacked and factories were burnt. Loyalist and IRA gunmen were everywhere. So in response, residents erected burning barricades to block British troops from entering their neighbourhoods. In Derry, barricades were once again raised around Free Derry, which for the next 11 months operated largely outside British authority. Between 9th and the 11th of August, 24 people were killed or fatally injured. 20 civilians, 14 Catholics and 6 Protestants, 2 provisional IRA members killed by the British Army and 2 British soldiers killed by the IRA.
So I have a logistics question. The burning barriers, how do they keep them burning?
Something like that goes.
What's on them?
I presume they just replace the barriers. That'd be the same barriers.
What?
What are barriers? Loads of shit. Like, what do you call those things? Pallets. Yeah. Do you think that they just have a burning...
Just don't, like, my head...
Like a burning bush?
My head... Hopefully. Who knows?
Like...
Pallet days are coming. Pallet days are coming. Pallet days are coming.
So, of the civilians who died, 17 were shot by the British Army, while the remaining 3 were killed by unidentified assailants. In the Ballymurphy housing estate in West Belfast, the 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment killed 11 Catholic civilians over the course of 2 days, a series of events later known as the Ballymurphy Massacre. Another hotspot was Ardoyne in North Belfast, where soldiers fatally shot 3 individuals on the 9th of August. At the same time, sectarian violence between Protestants and Catholics escalated sharply. Many Protestant families fled Ardoyne, with around 200 burning their own homes to prevent them being taken over by Catholics. Remind you of anybody? Remind you of anybody?
They burned their own homes.
So the Catholics couldn't take them. Remind you of anybody currently that's doing stuff?
Do the Israelis burn their own homes to stop the Palestinians?
They would burn down, like, their gardens to stop the Palestinians taking things off their, like, olive trees and stuff. Yeah, they're insane. They burn down areas of, like areas that they want to live in just so the Palestinians can't live there. This is all connected. This is all linked, and it's all due to British influence. Both Protestant and Catholic families abandoned their neighbourhoods, retreating to opposite sides of a dividing line that would later become the site of a permanent peace line. Catholics' homes were also set ablaze in Ardoyne and other areas. In total, around 7,000 people, mostly Catholics, were displaced. Approximately 2,500 Catholic refugees fled across the border to the Republic of Ireland, where emergency refugee camps were established to shelter them. Isn't that crazy?
Like,
this is insane. Like, you know, and I know we've talked about the Troubles a lot of times. We've talked about the Troubles. But, like, I don't think we'll ever fully understand the the scope of it or what the fuck was really happening. Because this was consistently happening. This was like every second day there was something new fucked up going on. It was just constantly, constantly, constantly. At this point, this was like the height, right in the like epicenter. Interment had been used several times in Ireland throughout the 20th century, but it had not yet been employed during the Troubles, which began in the late 1960s. Ulster loyalist paramilitary groups like the Ulster Volunteer Force had been carrying out a low-level campaign of violence since 1966. Following the riots of August 1969, the British Army was deployed to support the RUC. Up to that point, the Irish Republican Army had been largely inactive. However, as violence escalated, the IRA split over how to respond, dividing into the Provisional IRA and the Official IRA. Between 1970 and 1971, the Provisional IRA launched a guerrilla campaign against the British Army and the RUC, while the officials adopted a more defensive approach. Remind you of anybody? During this period, clashes were frequent between state forces and both IRA factions, as well as between loyalists and Republicans. Most loyalist violence targeted Catholic citizens, though they occasionally engaged in confrontations with security forces and the IRA. The proposal to reintroduce internment targeting Irish Republican militants originated from the Northern Ireland Unionist government, led by Prime Minister Brian Faulkner. The decision was finalised during a meeting between Faulkner and British Prime Minister Edward Heath on the 5th of August 1971. The primary objective was to weaken the IRA and curb its attacks, while also helping to prevent a loyalist backlash and the collapse of Faulkner's administration. Although the British cabinet recommended some, quote, balancing actions, such as arresting loyalist paramilitaries, seizing weapons from mostly unionist rifle clubs and imposing an indefinite ban on parade, Faulkner opposed all of these measures and was like, no, fuck the Catholics. He argued that parade bans were unenforceable, that the rifle clubs were not a security threat, and that there was no evidence of loyalist terrorism.
Holy shit.
Brits are always at it, lads. The Brits are always at it. Ultimately, a six-month parade ban was agreed upon, but loyalists were not included in the internment plan, which was set to begin on the 9th of August. As an initial arrest list compiled by the RUC Special Branch and MI5 contained 450 names, but only 350 individuals were located. Some of the key targets had been warned in advance. The list was controversially included prominent non-violent activists from the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association and the People's Democracy, such as Ivan Barr and Michael Farrell. So these people had no connection to violence whatsoever. They were just trying to create like peace in the area. Despite ongoing loyalist attacks, primarily against Catholics and nationalists, security officials advised that loyalist groups did not pose an immediate threat to state security of the justice system. As a result, no loyalists were interned. Historian Tim Pacoogan noted, quote, what they did not include a single loyalist. Although the UVF had begun the killing and the bombing, this organisation was left untouched, as were other violent loyalist satellite organisations, such as TARA, the Shankill Defence Association and the Ulster Protestant Volunteers. Faulkner was urged by the British to include a few Protestants in the trawl, but apart from two Republicans, he refused. Faulkner himself later wrote, quote, the idea of arresting anyone as an exercise in political cosmetics was repugnant to me, but that's what you did.
Yeah.
That's what you did. The internment operation was planned and directed at the highest levels of the British government. Specially trained personnel were sent to Northern Ireland to instruct local forces in interrogation practices known as, quote, the five techniques. Methods that critics later described as euphemisms for torture. Evidence suggests that some members of the RUC trained in conventional policing were reluctant to use these methods. In a confidential memorandum dated 22nd of December 1971, Brigadier Lewis expressed concern over the lack of intensive interrogation by the RUC. He noted that some special branch officers were not fully pressing detainees for intelligence, but said senior officials were planning to helicopter visit these outposts, quote, to read the riot act. So he was like, you're not being cruel enough. Be more cruel.
That's what I say to myself at work.
You stupid fucking bitch.
Be more cruel.
It's like, what does Liz Lemon say to herself in the mirror? When she's sweating. Stop sweating, you stupid bitch. That's me to myself all the time. By the 13th of August, media reports suggested that the violence was beginning to subside, seemingly due to fatigue among both the IRA and the security forces. On August 15th, the National Social Democratic and Labour Party launched a campaign of civil disobedience in response to the introduction of internment. by October 17th and an estimated 16,000 households were participating by withholding rent and rates on council housing. So they were like, we're not paying our rent unless you get rid of these camps. On 16th of August, more than 8,000 workers in Derry went on strike to protest internment. That same day, Joe Cahill, chief staff of the Provisional IRA, held a press conference where they stated that only 30 members of the Provisional IRA had been interned. On the 22nd of August, around 133 Nationalist and Republican councillors announced they would no longer serve on district councils as a form of protest. The SDLP also withdrew its members from several public bodies. Then, on the 19th of October, five members of Parliament from Northern Ireland began a 48-hour hunger strike outside 10 Downing Street in London, also opposing internment. Participants included John Hume, Austin Curry and Bernadette Devlin. Go on, Bernadette!
Bernadette!
Bernadette puts her fucking money where her mouth is. She always did. The backlash against internment played a significant role in the British government's decision to suspend the Northern Ireland government and Parliament, replacing them with direct rule from Westminster. This shift, which took effect on the 23rd of March 1972, placed Northern Ireland under the authority of a British Secretary of State. Historians widely agreed that the internment deepened sectarian divisions in Northern Ireland while failing to achieve its main objective of capturing key IRA figures. Senator Maurice Hayes, a Catholic and then chairman of the Northern Ireland Committee Relations Commission, described the policy as, quote, possibly the worst of all the stupid things that the government could do. Which I love. I love that quote. A review by the British Ministry of Defence, or the MOD, similarly concluded that internment had been, quote, a major mistake. However, some commentators have offered a more nuanced perspective, suggesting that while the idea of internment may have not have been fundamentally flawed, its implementation was poorly planned and executed. It was fucking stupid from the get-go. Despite its shortcomings, the MOD review acknowledged some short-term gains. Operation Demetrius reportedly resulted in the capture of 50 provisional IRA officers, 107 volunteers, and yielded valuable intelligence on IRA operations, including the discovery of arms and explosive caches. Well, I mean, if you're going to torture people, you're going to get information out of them. So.
Nevertheless, you're going to get a lot of false information.
A lot of bullshit as well. Nevertheless, many of those arrested had no actual connection to the IRA at all. Their inclusion on the arrest list was attributed to hasty planning and flawed intelligence. The inaccuracy of the list, combined with the reports of abuse and mistreatment of internees, alienated many nationalists, increasing the support for the IRA and diminishing faith in peaceful political situations, which is exactly what is happening in Palestine. Following up, and then people are like,
I would have joined the IRA.
Sarah Jane. Like, honest to God, I would have been one of those girls putting the petrol bombs together.
If I lived during that time,
I would have been fucking petrol bombs. I know I would have been.
I probably would have just made sandwiches. But, you know.
Come in.
Come in, have a cup of tea. But if you got a sore, I'll get a bandage.
Well, my mum told me about my grandmother having to feed the black and tans. Like, they would come and put their guns outside the door, and, like, as a threat. And she'd have to sit there and make food for these cunts. Otherwise, something would happen to her family. I would have joined the IRA.
Yeah.
I would have been, as Colin said, Bernadette Devlin looks like she drank a mug of piss. And I'm like, I would have been drinking mugs of piss too.
Yeah.
Like 100%. Like hearing this is insane. And people are like, you know, people are like, why do Hamas exist? Why do you think?
Why do you think?
Any Irish person that asks that question, catch on to yourself. Join the IRA. Following Operation Demetrius, recruitment into both provisional and official IRA surged. The exact opposite of what they wanted to happen, happened. Internment also triggered a dramatic rise in violence. In the 8 months preceding the operation, 34 people were killed in conflict-related incidents. In the 4 months that followed, the death toll rose to 140. A serving British Royal Marine officer observed, quote, "It, internment, has in fact increased terrorist activity, perhaps boosted IRA recruitment, polarised further the Catholic and Protestant communities, and reduced the ranks of the much-needed Catholic moderates." In 1972, an anti-internment protest would lead to one of Northern Ireland's most tragic events and the murder of 14 people by the British paratroopers, and this would be Bloody Sunday. Operation Demetrius was launched at 4 a.m. on Monday, 9th of August, and unfolded in two stages. One, the arrest of suspects and their transfer to one of three regional holding centres, Girdwood in Belfast, Ballykinlare in County Down, or McGilligan in County Londonderry. County Derry. The identification and interrogation of detainees resulting in either their release or further detention at Crumlin Row Prison or aboard HMS Maidstone, a prison ship, anchored in Belfast Harbour. So that were the first two things. During the first wave of raids across Northern Ireland, 342 individuals were arrested, as I said. Many detainees reported that both they and their families were subjected to physical assault, verbal abuse and threats by soldiers. There were widespread claims of troops forcibly entering homes without warning, sometimes firing baton rounds through doors and windows. Numerous detainees alleged mistreatment during their three-day confinement in the holding centres. Complaints included being beaten, threatened, verbally abused, deprived of sleep and food, and harassed with dogs. Some reported being forced to run through gauntlets of baton-wielding soldiers, navigate makeshift obstacle courses, or endure other forms of humiliation, such as having their heads forcibly shaved or being kept naked. Additional claims included being burned with cigarettes, having sacks placed over their heads for extended periods, being choked with ropes, held at gunpoint, dragged by the hair, forced to run barefoot behind armoured vehicles, or tied to them as human shields. Several detainees also described being hooded, beaten, and thrown from low hovering helicopters after being led to believe they were hundreds of feet in the air, part of a psychological tactic used to instill fear. I guess where else they do that?
That happened to me.
That didn't happen to you.
It did happen to me!
It's Colour House, Sarah. They
yeah, both... well, listen! I understand Sarah's the terror.
Like, solidarity. Solidarity with these
they
people.
They put me on a plank and they said, reach up there, we're going to lift you up. They put me on a plank with a blindfold.
And then you were like, ah!
They said, reach up there, we're going to pick you up. And then they picked me up and they said, and as I was lifted up, I fell. And I thought I was...
Were you like, ah!
Was I like, ah! I said, wasn't I? I was like, ah!
That's crazy though that it makes you think you're
and
like
I was in front of at least 60 people from school.
I mean, this is practically what happened to you right here.
I
this is yuck.
Did they get money from the English government?
Sarah's going to be on the did they, you're going to be on the news around I live this.
Yeah, I live this. I'm in solidarity with these people. I live it.
Claire House needs to be sued.
Yes.
The interrogation of internees was described as barbaric and torturous. Of those arrested, the people that were questioned by both the British Army and the RUC, from this group, 12 internees were selected for additional deep interrogation.
Why?
Involving sensory deprivation at a secret site later identified as Shackleton Barracks near Ballykelly. Two more men were added to this group in October, bringing the total to 14. Later known collectively as the Hooded Men, they also called them the Guinea Pigs.
So were they just testing torture?
Yeah, testing torture. This is like... It's so linked to everything that's currently happening. Like, it's insane. Like, the torture tactics that are being used by the British Army. Like, the reason Israel exists is because of Britain. So nobody should be shocked by any of this.
Yeah.
Everything is... It's so fucked up how everything is linked. And it's only as you get older, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
This is not a standalone episode.
No.
You know what I mean? After first receiving the same treatment as other internees, the selected men were hooded, handcuffed, and flown by helicopter to the site. En route, soldiers beat them and threatened to throw them from the aircraft. On arrival, they were stripped, photographed and medically examined. For the next 7 days, except during interrogation sessions, they were kept hooded and handcuffed in a cold cell while exposed to a constant loud hissing sound. They were forced to maintain a stress position for long periods and were repeatedly beaten. They were also deprived of sleep, food and drink. Some further reported other abuses, kicks to the genitals, heads slammed against walls, mock executions with blank rounds, and threats of injections. The cumulative effects included extreme physical and mental exhaustion, acute anxiety, depression, hallucinations, disorientation, and repeated fainting. The interrogation regime used on these men became known as the Five Techniques, developed with training and guidance from senior British intelligence officials, cunts. The European Count of Court of Human Rights later defined them as, so this is what they are. So the first one is wall standing, compelling detainees to stand for hours in a painful spread eagle's position, arms high against a wall, legs apart, feet pushed back so weight bore down through the fingertips and toes. Second one was hooding, which is covering the detainee's head with a dark bag kept in place continuously, except during questioning. The third is continuous noise, holding detainees in a room filled with a persistent, loud hissing sound between interrogations. The fourth is sleep deprivation, which is preventing detainees from sleeping pending interrogation. And the fifth was food and drink deprivation, restricting diet and fluids during their confinement and before questioning. So basically, it's taking away all the natural things that you need
yeah.
to survive as a human. Only the 14 hooded men were subjected to the full combination of all five techniques. In the months that followed, other internees reported experiencing one or more of these methods, along with additional alleged abuses, waterboarding, electric shocks, burned from matches or candles, being forced to stand over hot electric fires while beaten, genital beatings and squeezing, insertion of objects into the anus, forced injections, whipping of the soles of the feet, and psychological tactics such as Russian roulette.
All of those things are awful. Horrendous. But why do you then need to go and rape somebody also?
I don't know. Why do you need to do that? Like, that's her, like, why do you need to do that? Like, what part of your brain thinks this is okay? Like, and that's the question we need to ask everybody. Like, how fucked are you in the head that somebody says to you, insert objects into these people's anuses as a means to what? As a means to what? Like, that's fucking horrific. I don't know. So on Wednesday the 9th of February 1972, a government report was released by a committee chaired by Lord Parker examining the interrogation methods used by security forces on internees. These methods included so-called in-depth interrogation, hooding, food deprivation, everything I mentioned above. Two members of the committee, including Lord Parker himself, concluded that the techniques were justified. However, Lord Gardner issued a dissenting opinion opposing their use. By Christmas 1975 and following years of protests and violence, the internment camps were closed and most, but not all, of the prisoners were released. Those who were not and who seemed to have legitimate prosecutions pending were kept or placed in a disused Royal Air Force airfield, which became the Long Kesh Detention Centre. The facility was later renamed Her Majesty's Prison Maze, reflecting its location in the township of Mays. In 1976, eight new cell blocks were constructed, known as the H blocks, due to their distinctive H-shaped design. These blocks were designated specifically for individuals convicted of, quote, scheduled terrorist offences. So there's like, for ages I was like, what's a H block? And I was like, oh, it's a literal just in the shape H.
Of
an H.
Yeah.
Each H block consisted of four self-contained prison units known as wings, which were monitored and controlled from a central area referred to as the circle, the middle of the structure. The entire prison complex was surrounded by a 15-foot perimeter fence, while each individual H-block was enclosed by a 5.5-metre high concrete wall topped with barbed wire. So they was like, this is impenetrable.
Yeah, but it's not.
All gates were made of solid steel and operated electronically, making the facility widely regarded as impenetrable. Members of the IRA and the INLA who were imprisoned considered themselves prisoners of war and believed it was their duty to escape. They rejected being treated as ordinary criminals and demanded special category status, a designation that would exempt them from wearing prison uniforms, performing prison labour and subject them to different conditions. Their status had been granted to paramilitary prisoners in Northern Ireland in 1972, but was revoked in 1976 by Labour Secretary of State Merlin Rees. So he was like, you bitches ain't getting shit. When Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister in 1979, she reinforced the government's hardline stance. In a speech delivered in Belfast, the ball's in this one, on March 5, 1981, she declared, quote, there is no such thing as political murder, political bombing or political violence. There is only criminal murder, criminal bombing and criminal violence. We will not compromise on this. There will be no political status. And then she got Alzheimer's.
Did she?
Yes, she died. Forgot what a cunt she was.
That's a shame, but that I would have liked her to
should have remembered
in a different way.
The first act of defiance led by Kieran Nugent was a refusal to wear prison uniforms, arguing that only convicted criminals wore them, not political prisoners. Since they were denied permission to wear their own clothes, the prisoners wrapped themselves in bedsheets. Those participating in the protest became known as being, quote, on the blanket.
On the blanket.
By 1978, over 300 men had joined the protest.
As opposed to being on the blob.
On the blob. But the British government remained steadfast and did not relent.
I'd say they were freezing.
Freezing? In that cold old hole of place.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what they had. Determination. Self-determination they
and
had.
And that's where I think...
We'd fall.
Well, yeah.
I think you... First hurdle. I did it. Here's all the information.
I think you probably would be so indignant that you'd be okay.
I'd be in that blanket.
Yeah, no. Right? But I would say...
Chucky or law.
Listen. I'm actually a member of the INLA. And I broke into this group.
I'm infiltrating the group for you.
So, yeah. Like, if you will give me a jumper...
Just one jumper.
Just one jumper, please.
So in March,
and the smell of shit in here.
They're rubbing it on the walls.
It smells shocking in here. Holy God!
Lads, can you not smell it, lads?
Lads, oh, lads.
Dirty
cloth. I'm only messing. Bobby Sands.
R.I.P. In March 1978, some prisoners refused to leave their cells to shower or use the lavatory.
Here we go.
Because they were being beaten when they did. As a result, wash hand basins were installed inside their cells. Prisoners on the blanket reported that one of the most stressful experiences was the anticipation of the cell door opening, only to be dragged out, naked and defenceless, beaten into semi-consciousness and then thrown back inside. Like, that's fucking horrific.
Are these the guards doing that?
Guards are doing it, yeah. Republican prison, but that's like the thing. It's like, obviously, it's the Lord of the Flies type thing. Like, if you put people in a position where you're like, you can do this, they're just going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they're insane.
Yeah. You've seen the poop cruise.
I did see the poop cruise. Everybody lost their goddamn minds on the poop cruise.
Yeah.
People. What are those two people fucking on the
deck?
What are you doing?
The fucking on the deck.
But like, also, realistically, who thought it was a good idea to give free alcohol to a bunch of people on a cruise, trapped on a boat?
With no toilets.
With no toilets. The first thing I need to do after a drink is shit.
Do you?
Do I? I fucking wrecked that toilet.
Like, what? The next day.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It just leaves my body up. Like, gone.
No.
Him.
Now, I'll come home and throw up.
Yeah, you throw up, yeah.
And I'll do that thing where I'm lying in bed and I'm like, tonight's the night you're going to throw up.
I can do this. I believe in us.
I literally, my internal thoughts are like, tonight's the night.
You're not going to get sick.
You're going to do it. I believe in you so much, stomach. Come on. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, like, I'm sweating.
Dude, the sweats before you throw up.
And I'm like, the room is spinning. I saw you bastard.
The sweats before you throw up is one of the most upsetting things. Yeah. That upsets me so much.
The sweats before you throw up. When you're hanging over the
sink. Oh my God, it's the worst.
With the cold cloth in the back of your neck.
Or the part where you know it's coming.
Yeah.
I do this thing where I go, God, please, why? Please, God, why me? Why? Like, coming, why am I doing that?
Oh, when it's coming, I go like this. Oh, it's nearly done. You're nearly there.
It is literally the most dramatic thing.
So dramatic. I just be like, it's okay. My eyes should be closed. Because I can't, if I see the sick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get, God, more sick.
Get more sick.
So my eyes should be closed. I'm like, it's okay. You're going to get through this. You're nearly there. It's so close. And then I can feel it underneath your tits.
Yeah.
You know, when the sick inside sits underneath there. Your breast and you're like,
I hate it so much.
It's so close. Come on. And then it comes up and you're like.
But so I remember somebody saying it's the vomiting for humans is like the nearest thing to us being the most honest that we can ever be with ourselves. Like, in the sense that you're like, I would do anything not to do this right now. I would do anything not to get sick. Please, God, take it away. Like, I'd be like, please, God, take this away.
I know. You've all heard what I do.
God's
not too far to pass the tits. It's not poo. You're not doing it separate. I'd be on the toilet going, why have you forsaken me? Why have you forsaken me?
Oh, I hate it so much.
And then I'd be like, oh, I shouldn't have had that chicken.
That's it. I'd be like, what, I eat that? And then I'd be like, stop thinking about food, because I immediately get sick.
I'd be like, oh.
But my favourite thing afterwards is to lay on the cold tiles. I do that.
No, I can't do that because I get really dizzy.
I just lay on the tiles.
And then Graham inevitably wakes up halfway through and he's like, Sarah, and I go, don't come in here! Don't come in here! And then he's going, do you need anything? Water! Water!
That is so going to be tomorrow night, by the way.
Oh, yeah,
100% it's happening.
Oh, don't come in here!
Don't come in this room!
And it's like, I get a runny nose.
Oh, me too, yeah.
And I'm like, I'll come in here.
Yeah, no, it's vile. Anyway, that was our throwing up stories. Sorry. I don't even know where I was.
Sorry. Oh,
yeah. So Republican prisoners also endured abuse both before and upon entering the Mays prison. Queen's University Belfast professor Phil Scranton described their treatment as involving, quote, unacceptable levels of physical and psychological punishment, violence and violation. He noted that these acts, carried out deliberately and without institutional accountability, amounted to cruel, inhumane and degrading treatment, meeting the UN General Assembly's 1975 definition of torture. In 1978, the European Court of Human Rights found the British government guilty of, quote, cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment during interrogation procedures. And it didn't matter.
And it still doesn't matter.
Yeah. The prisoners requested showers to be installed in their cells, but when this was denied, they stopped using the hand wash basins. At the end of April 1978, a fight broke out between a prisoner and an officer in H Block 6. The prisoner was placed in solitary confinement and rumours spread that he had been severely beaten. In response, prisoners smashed the furniture in their cells, prompting authorities to remove all remaining furniture except blankets and mattresses. The prisoners then refused to leave their cells, making it impossible for officers to clear them out. This refusal escalated the blanket protest into the dirty protest as prisoners refused to slop out, which means enter their chamber pots, and began smearing excrement on their cell walls to prevent maggot infestations.
Sorry, excuse me, what?
I don't know how that works. How does it work if you put poop on the wall? How does that work?
Is it that it's not thick enough for them to lay eggs?
Maybe. Scumbags. I understand what they were doing, but like, scumbags. Do you imagine what that smells like? And they're men. I'm not saying women's shit smells better.
It doesn't.
But they're men. Plus, can you imagine what their diets were like? Well, garbage. Gruel. Like.
Yeah. I draw a little mustache and a goatee on me.
Sarah. We can't keep doing this.
Two little glasses.
Two little glasses.
Hello. Smell of shit.
You get that?
You smell that? Oh my god!
I feel like you would go crazy.
I would go crazy.
Yeah, I feel like
they open the door and I'm literally like someone at Indian.
You have to be slightly insane.
Like a match.
Yeah, to do something like that. So then the hunger strikes began. So on the 27th of October 1980, seven Republican prisoners began a hunger strike, refusing food and a demand for political status. The Conservative government, led by Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, initially stood firm. In December, the strike was called off after it appeared the government had agreed to meet their demands. However, officials quickly reverted to their original position, assuming the prisoners would not resume the protest.
So did they do this here? They were like, we are going to accept.
We're
so going to
give it to you. If you eat something, we're going to give you political status. You just eat something and then we'll stop. And then they thought what would happen is they'd just go back to being like, oh, that's fine. Are they crazy? Do they know who they're dealing with? These people were smearing their own shit on the walls.
Yeah. Stop the maggots.
Stop maggots coming in. That assumption proved wrong. On the 1st of March 1981, Bobby Sands, the leader of the Provisional IRA prisoners, launched a second hunger strike. In a powerful symbolic move, Sands was nominated as a candidate in the Fermanagh and South Tyrone by-election during the strike and won. Despite the international attention and mounting pressure, the British government maintained its hardline stance. On the 5th of May 1981, after 66 days without food, Bobby Sands died. His funeral in Belfast drew over 100,000 mourners. Over the following months, 9 more hunger strikers died, members of both the IRA and INLI.
100,000 people went to his funeral.
Also died before the protest was finally ended in October. In 1983, the lads were like, we're getting out of here. Somehow we're getting the fuck out of here. Her Majesty's prison maze was regarded as one of the most secure prisons in Europe. Each H block was surrounded by the concrete wall, with the... and the perimeter fence. All the gates were metal. But like, I mean, what does that mean? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At around 2:30 p.m. Oh, sorry. Despite the high security, prisoners spent months planning an escape. Bobby Storey and Jerry Kelly, who had taken positions as orderlies in H7, used their access to study weaknesses in the prison system.
What's an orderly?
I think that they look after people in the hospital part.
Oh, okay.
So they do like the... take the like the blankets and stuff like that.
The beds and stuff.
Over time, 6 handguns were successfully smuggled inside. At around 2:30 p.m. on the 25th of September, the operation began. Prisoners seized control of H7 by simultaneously taking prison officers hostage at gunpoint, preventing them from activating alarms. One officer was stabbed with a craft knife and another was struck from behind. Jerry Kelly shot a guard in the head as he tried to intervene. The officer survived. By 2:50 p.m., the prisoners had full control of H7 and no alarms had yet been triggered. Several prisoners disguised themselves in stolen prison officer uniforms, while others forced the guards to hand over their car keys and vehicle details, potentially for use later in the escape. A rear guard of prisoners stayed behind to oversee the hostages and ensure the alarm remained off, returning to their cells only once they believed the others had cleared the facility. At 3:25 p.m, a food delivery lorry arrived at H7. Brendan McFarlane and other prisoners took the driver and a prison orderly hostage at gunpoint and brought them into the block. The driver was informed that this vehicle would be used in the escape and was instructed on the route and how to respond if stopped. Story warned him. He said, "This man, Jerry Kelly, is doing 30 years and he will shoot you without hesitation if he has to. He has nothing to lose." By 3:50 p.m, the prisoners were ready to move. The driver's foot was tied to the clutch and 37 prisoners climbed into the back of the lorry. Jerry Kelly lay in the cab with the gun pointed at the driver, who was also told the vehicle was booby-trapped with a hand grenade. It wasn't. Just before 4 p.m, the lorry approached the main gate, where the plan was to seize the gatehouse. 10 prisoners, dressed as guards and armed with guns and chisels, exited the lorry and stormed the gatehouse, taking the officers inside hostage. By 4:05 p.m, as tensions rose, one of the officers managed to hit the alarm button. When staff responded over the intercom, a senior officer being held at gunpoint claimed it had been pressed accidentally. So he was like, "Oh, I didn't mean to."
It was a mistake.
Chaos began to unfold inside the gatehouse as the growing number of hostages made it increasingly difficult for the prisoners to maintain control. Officers arriving for their shifts were captured at gunpoint and added to the group of hostages. So I think they kind of got a little bit ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
They had like 40 people in one room. During the commotion, Officer James Ferris made a break for it, running toward the pedestrian gate in an attempt to raise the alarm. He was chased by Dermot Finucane. Ferris had already been stabbed 3 times in the chest and collapsed before he could alert others. Finucane continued...
Who stabbed him?
The Ferris guy.
Damien Finucane.
Dermot Finucane stabbed this Ferris guy 3 times and he kept running.
If I was a guard, I'd be like, "Yeah, go ahead."
Finucane continued towards the pedestrian gate where he stabbed the officer operating it, as well as 2 others who had just entered the prison. The incident was observed by a soldier on duty in a nearby watchtower who radioed the British Army Operations Room to report what he believed was a fight between prison staff. The operations room contacted the prison's emergency control room, which downplayed the situation, stating everything was under control and that an earlier alarm had been triggered accidentally.
So it's the same thing. Yeah.
At 4:12 p.m, the alarm was finally raised when a prison officer in the gatehouse overpowered the prisoner guarding him, forcing him out of the room and called the ECR. Though by then it was too late to stop the escape. They were already gone. By that time, the prisoners had succeeded in opening the main gate and were waiting for their comrades still in the gatehouse to board the lorry. However, 2 prison officers used their vehicles to block the exit, forcing the escapees to abandon the lorry and head on foot towards the outer perimeter fence, approximately 25 yards away. 4 prisoners attacked one of the officers and hijacked the car. Can you imagine how insane this all was? Like, this was all happening like at the same time. People just being like... Fucking crazy. Driving it toward the other gate. After crashing into another vehicle near the gate, they fled the car. 2 managed to escape through the gate. 1 was captured while exiting the vehicle and another was caught after being chased down by a soldier. At the main gate, a prison officer pursuing 2 remaining prisoners was shot in the leg. The gunman was then shot and wounded by a soldier in a watchtower and taken into custody, while the other prisoner was captured after falling. The rest successfully climbed over the perimeter fence. By 4:18 p.m, the main gate was secured, but 35 prisoners had already breached the prison's perimeter, making it one of the largest prison breaks in British history and the biggest in Europe since World War II. Outside the prison, the IRA had planned a coordinated support operation involving around 100 armed volunteers. However, a 5-minute miscalculation meant that no getaway vehicles were in position when the escapees emerged. As a result, they were forced to flee across fields or hijack civilian cars. The British Army and Royal Ulster Constabulary quickly activated a contingency plan. By 4:25, vehicle checkpoints had been established around the prison and others were set up in strategic locations across Northern Ireland. 1 escapee was recaptured at 11 p.m. that night. In total, 20 prison officers were injured during the escape. 13 were kicked or beaten, 4 were stabbed and 2 were shot. 1 officer, James Ferris, who had been stabbed during the breakout, suffered a fatal heart attack and died.
Oh.
So the stabbing didn't kill him. He stabbed like three times. 15 of the escapees were recaptured on the day of the breakout, including four who were found by the RUC hiding underwater in the River Laggan, breathing through reeds to avoid detection. Over the following 2 days, another four were apprehended, among them Hugh Corey and Patrick McIntyre, who were caught after a two-hour standoff at a remote farmhouse. Of the remaining 19 fugitives, 18 reportedly made their way to the IRA stronghold of South Armagh. There, two members of the South Armagh Brigade coordinated their transport to safe houses. The escapees were given the choice to either rejoin the IRA's armed campaign or receive a new identity and employment in the United States.
Is that where they went?
Kieran Fleming, one of the escapees, drowned in the Banner River near Kesh in December 1984 while fleeing from a Special Air Services ambush that killed fellow IRA member Antoine McGilla Brigette. Jared McDonald was arrested in Glasgow in June 1985 along with four other IRA operatives, including Brighton bomber Patrick McGee. He was later convicted of conspiring to carry out 16 bombings across England. Seamus McIlwain was killed by the SAS in Rosslea in April 1986. Jerry Kelly and Brendan McFarlane were rearrested in the Netherlands in January 1986 and extradited to Northern Ireland in December of that year, reducing the number of escapees still at large to 12. Horrig McCarney was killed in May 1987 Loch Hall ambush alongside seven other members of IRA's East Tyrone Brigade, marking the IRA's deadliest single loss since the 1920s. In November 1987, Paul Kane and one of the escape planners, Dermot Finucane, brother of murdered solicitor Pat Finucane, were arrested in Granard County, Longford, on British extradition warrants. Robert Russell, captured in Dublin in 1984, was extradited to Northern Ireland, followed by Paul Kane in April 1989. In March 1990, the Irish Supreme Court blocked the extradition of James Pius Clark and Dermot Finucane, citing concerns they would likely face abuse if returned to Northern Ireland. Like, that's how bad they knew it was. Like, so four escapees, Kevin Barry Art, Paul Brennan, James J. Smith and Terence Kirby, collectively known as the H Block 4, were arrested in the United States between 1992 and 1994 and mounted lengthy legal fights against extradition. Smith was returned to Northern Ireland in 1996 and later released in 1998. In 2000, the UK government withdrew extradition charges for Brennan, Art and Kirby. Though still technically fugitives, by 2003, Her Majesty's Prison Services stated they were no longer being actively pursued. I don't know why. Brennan, married to a US citizen, was deported from the United States to the Republic of Ireland in August 2009. Tony Kelly was arrested in Letterkenny in October 1997, but was not extradited. Dermot McNally, who had been living in the Republic of Ireland, was located in 1996. Both he and Finucane received amnesties in January 2002, allowing them to return to Northern Ireland. Tony McAllister, however, did not receive similar leniency.
I hope some of them received leniency.
No, do you think they're...
Yeah. Rats!
Rats!
Yappa yappa yappa.
Chanel, you're like a rat. Yappa yappa yappa. As of 2008, two escapees, Jared Fryers and Seamus Campbell, have never been located.
That's cool.
That is cool.
Isn't that cool?
Where are they? We're going to start a podcast where we find them.
What are they called?
Jared Fryers and Seamus Campbell. Jared, where this, we'll be like this on the cover of the podcast now.
You can't see, but we both have our arms folded and we're both wearing black. And we're kind of leaning into each other. As if the other person is telling the other person something.
That's where we're going to be. That's going to be the cover. Yeah. And we're going to find Jared Fryers and Seamus Campbell.
Would you like to...
I feel like we could find them between us. Like where I'm from. And where you're from.
Yeah.
I feel like we could ask some
I feel like where I'm from.
We could ask some questions.
There's no administration happening there. Do you know what I mean?
Nobody's got notes. Like,
There's no files. There's no administration. There's no logistics planning happening there. Do you know
I love that they didn't escape because the IRA got the time wrong by 5 minutes. There's no planning involved. They just turn up whenever,
yeah? Like, you know, I just feel like where you're from, they might be doing the admin. Yeah. Where I'm from, they're like shoving the knees.
Pew-pew. They're doing the pew-pews.
Yeah. And,
they're kneecapping where you're from and they're typing where I'm from.
Well, yeah, and they're also in where I'm from, they're like, sell the heroin there so we can fund the other stuff we need to do to get the Republic back.
But you know, it's problematic at best.
Hey, listen.
Problematic
sometimes
at best.
Sometimes when you're trying to make a country whole again,
you gotta do some stuff, man.
You gotta
get the spoon involved.
A couple of 100,000 that you gotta get hooked on the spoon.
Just get the spoon.
Get hooked on the
cross. Did the Lord himself come down off the cross for the spoon?
Did the Lord himself come down off the cross for the spoon?
So the returned maze escapees faced brutal treatment once again from the prison staff. During US extradition procedures for James J. Smith, Maze prison governor John Baxter admitted that prisoners were attacked by guard dogs and beaten up upon their return, and that staff later lied in court to cover it up.
Well,
of course they did. No officers were disciplined and there were no plans to investigate further. They said, that's that.
They should stab a couple of them.
A couple, yeah.
You know?
But like, there's only so far you can be pushed before you start stabbing someone.
This is true.
Like, if you say birthday Eve one more time, this might end badly.
It's my birthday. No. I'ma do what I want.
No, you're not.
I'm gonna rub shit all over these walls.
We're gonna do a dirt protest tonight.
It's my birthday.
If it doesn't go the way you want it tomorrow, you could do a dirt protest.
I tell you now.
Very bloody
dirt. They're circular. Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Circular and want to get a good cleaner in for Saturday.
So US Judge Barbara Caulfield concluded that only Republican prisoners, not loyalists, were subjected to this abuse, which included dog bites and beatings. The prisoners were denied medical care and Northern Ireland courts later found evidence of a cover-up. Ex-prisoners, according to witnesses, continued to face harassment by security forces. Excuse me. For example, Sean Mackin testified to being assaulted and placed in solitary confinement whenever a prisoner officer was like around. Another escapee, Paul Kane, who was extradited in 1989, was verbally abused and physically mistreated immediately after being handed over, despite prior assurances from the Irish government that he would not be harmed. Lads! In 1976, the Irish government brought a case to the European Commission of Human Rights over the British use of the five techniques for interrogation. The commission unanimously found the combination of these methods amounted to torture due to their severe psychological and physical impact. However, in 1978, the European Court of Human Rights ruled that while the techniques constituted inhumane and degrading treatment in violation of Article 3, they did not meet the threshold for torture. How?
Why?
How does it not? They're shoving things up people's arses and making dogs bite them. That's torture. In 1977, the UK Attorney General gave a formal assurance that the five techniques would never be used again for interrogation under any circumstances. And if you believe that, that's not, I wouldn't believe that. Like, there's no way. They're clearly still using that shit. And if they're not using it, they've moved it to other countries and taught other soldiers how to do it. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it's crazy because
I've been in the Ballyfermot Guard Station where they're torturing people, and I said it, and I'll say it again. And I said, do the Chinese burn harder! Harder in the queue.
Oh, play that hissing sound loud. Turn it up.
Yeah. Put the bag on his head.
But like,
Tesco's back.
I obviously knew about the hunger strikes and Bloody Sunday, but my knowledge of this was not linked to it.
No, no, I didn't know that they took... I had no idea that they just, like, swept up a load of people and were just presumed guilty.
But, like, it's crazy that that was their method. We'll just take 342 people that we don't actually know or anything to do with the IRA. And that definitely won't mean loads of people support the IRA after this. Like, are you fucking thick? So these things are created.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it's wild. And I love that those two men have never been found.
Oh my God.
I feel like we could find them.
Okay, I'm down. What do we need to do?
Down,
I know.
Where I'm from.
Training.
There's a man in where I'm from. I don't know if we can do this one. He's like heavily involved in the IRA. He was in prison for it and everything. So I feel like I'd go down and be like, hey.
Do you know?
Do you know where this is? My mum knows him. My mum knows his dad.
Get Cochleen on the case.
It's happening.
Come on.
On your birthday eve, we're going to find two IRA prisoners who escaped.
Say hey. It's my birthday. Hey. It's very important.
Hey. Respectfully.
Respectfully.
Hey, lower my tone. Hey. Yeah.
Respectfully. I know you've done some shit, but I've done some shit.
We've all done some shit.
I think we've got some things in common. Let's talk.
Okay.
And then I'd slide a Cadbury's bar chocolate across the table.
Oh my god. But yeah, no, it's wild that there's things that we I didn't fully know the scope of this at all, like, and how it all linked together. To save free Palestine.
And even the hunger strike stuff, I didn't realise all of the steps they took before the hunger strike.
Yep. Because obviously the British government made it out to be like, these crazy Irish are just starving themselves for no reason. It's like, no, you literally have been violently abusing them. Yeah. for years.
You just also said the exact same thing they said about the famine.
Yeah.
Oh!
Should they just starve instead?
The other things, couldn't they?
Couldn't they just either? Like, there's an American comedian who made that joke and it pissed me off so much. He was like, the reason the Irish starved is because, he's like, they had like loads of corn, but they didn't like corn. So that's the reason they starved. The Irish were like, we just won't eat corn. I was like, motherfucker, what are you talking about?
Who made this joke?
What's that? Oh, Jim Gaffigan. And he's like, his family are Irish. And I was like, what are you talking about? The food was literally taken out of our country and sent to the UK. They starved us. It was a genocide. He was like, they just didn't like corn.
Okay, I want to talk about the famine. Specifically, that there really wasn't even one.
That there was no famine. Sinead was right. But everybody, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everybody for still supporting the Patreon. We really appreciate you. Patreon.com/MurderMostIrish. Look at me.
Hey, I've got no money and it's my birthday, Eve. So if you want to just sign up for the Patreon.
Don't sign up for the Patreon now at all. Don't. Cancel your membership if you're listening.
Don't pay for my holiday, please.
Hey, we can pay for our holidays. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. It's like, you know, people like back in the day on Tumblr, they were like, hey guys, I didn't get paid what I thought I was going to get paid. Will you put money into my PayPal? No, I won't.
Yeah.
Because what do you have to do like the rest of us? Suffer.
Yeah.
No, I won't be doing that.
I think people who do that are crazy. Wild.
Like, don't get me wrong. I'm all for like, if it's a situation where it's like something really bad has happened, 100%. But just to be like, hey, I didn't get many
something
tips.
Really bad has happened to me.
What? Nothing has happened to you. It's not your birthday, Eve. It's Thursday, 2nd of October, 2025, which is just a regular Thursday.
Sorry, I'm alive.
What do you mean?
I'm here.
Is that what's wrong?
Living on this fucking rock.
I know.
That's happened to me and it's really bad. And if you could just...
Hey guys, if you could... So I'm going to set up a little PayPal.
I've got to put a QR code up
please,
for the fucking...
Please, for Sarah Jane.
What's it that they do? They go to that fucking ship hub. Like, here's a QR code for my table. Buy me a pint.
That's wild.
What's that pub called?
No idea.
It's completely against everything I believe in.
Who owns it?
You know those fucking ship hubs that...
Oh, fucking... The...
What are they called?
They're so awful. They are the worst place on earth.
As an Irish
Spoons,
person...
Weatherspoons.
As an Irish person...
Why are we...
When I tell you culturally, they offend me.
They're so offend... They are the most quintessential British thing I've ever seen. Like, when I walk in, I'm like, ugh, can smell.
And when people are like, here, send me... I said, send you a shit lasagna. So I'll send you a bowl of peas.
Also, don't ever... I went there one time with Flavio and I was like, why did you bring me here? And we got like food and then we got like a brownie and it just tastes like freezer.
It's all frozen
food. It's disgusting. And they brought me in a cup of tea and I was like, what is this? The water had... anyway, it doesn't matter. Why is it mess? I can't remember.
Are we doing copy for the podcast?
What do you mean?
Did the man not say...
Oh, yeah, I sent him all the stuff. I just haven't heard from him.
Imagine me and you doing it.
Food.
I think he's listened to
I think book. After what we just said on this episode, Sky might be like, hey, I'm not putting two people that said all Irish Republicans should be given a gun at birth on Sky News reading copy.
Well, I think we'll be right. And I think Sky News is missing out on the biggest scoop of its life.
They're missing out. They're not taking us on. But
also, Rupert Murdoch can suck my dick.
His son has taken over now.
Well, he can suck my dick too.
He gave it to the eldest. I'm the eldest boy.
I'm the eldest boy.
Yeah.
It takes a couple of... to crack a couple of Gregs to make a Tomlin.
I miss that show.
That show
is insane.
Phenomenal. Let's watch it again.
Okay, yeah, let's rewatch. Yeah.
What a phenomenal show.
It's so good. It's so fucking good. And I didn't want to like it because it's just rich white people, but they're all awful. So that I don't feel bad about liking it.
So good.
Anyway, everybody, goodbye. We'll see you next week. Say goodbye, Sarah Jane.
Bye.
Colin!
Well, I was doing next to nothing about a year ago when Sarah Jane and Emma came a knocking on my door. Said they figured out a better way to pass the time and do a little podcast researching through crime. They wanted cats and bees, the kind of place where men are not allowed. They wanted hoodies, cats and bees. On Sunday night, Sarah Jane would come around and lay a story down. And just about when everything was going as planned, Sarah Jane and Emma started making demands. You're gonna have to edit out for what we said. And I'll only recall
were sitting on a bed.
Ooties, cats and bees,
with a lifetime supply of Jenny Glow they wanted.
Ooties, cats and bees,
homicide, some Army Hammer Joe, and a song to end the show.